I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Brand is Female podcast. My guests today on this episode are challenging an industry that many of us interact with daily, but which hasn't seen meaningful innovation in decades. Jessica Bozeman and Bryn Davis-Williams are the founders of Double, a company they launched in 2020 with the goal of completely rethinking how bras are made and sold. Their journey began back in university, where a shared entrepreneurial drive and a curiosity for disrupting the status quo brought them together. What they noticed was simple yet powerful. Bras had not evolved. Despite changing bodies, lifestyles, and technologies, most undergarments were still being designed and produced the same way they had been for generations. So they set out to change that. Today, Double is revolutionizing the bra industry by using AI and smartphone scanning tech to offer custom fit made to measure bras. No fitting rooms needed, no guesswork, and no compromises. It's a business that combines deep empathy for the customer experience with cutting-edge innovation, and it's built on a foundation of friendship, grit, and a belief that women deserve better from the products they rely on every day. Here's my conversation with Jessica and Bryn. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. Bryn and Jessica, it's such a pleasure having you on The Brand is Female today. Thanks for making time to speak with me. I always start these conversations by asking guests to kind of go back in time a little bit. And I want to know, growing up, what were you dreaming of as a career later in life? And did you ever think you'd be entrepreneurs, or was it something completely different than what you're actually doing today? Maybe Jessica first.
Yeah. So when I got into high school, I took a like hec tech class where you do a little bit of like sewing and a little bit of like cooking class and woodwork and things like that. And I fell in love with sewing. And I'd always been somebody who really appreciated aesthetics and beauty and fashion. So I quickly wanted to become a fashion designer. And that was sort of my focus for all of high school. So I did a lot of sewing, I did fashion design. I worked at Fabricland. I did everything I could to get into that space. And then near the end, there wasn't a lot of education around what jobs look like and more unique fields, I guess I would say. So I thought that fashion designers sewed like all day, every day. So by by grade 12, I'd been doing a lot of sewing and I was like, oof, I don't know if I can do that for the rest of my life. I like being behind a computer, like I'm more of an academic. So then that led me to business because I was like, I'll do the business side of fashion, which I didn't know what that was at the time, but I knew it existed. So that was sort of what led me to business school.
I definitely went into high school not knowing what I wanted to do and taking like a big range of classes. And then I loved my psychology class and I loved my business class. And I did DECA, which was a high school business competition. And then I discovered nudge marketing, which is the combination of psychology and business. And so I decided I wanted to go into marketing and kind of use psychology in a business tool. So kind of similar to Jess, like the business of fashion for me, it was the business of psychology. And so my goal was kind of marketing, but I didn't know necessarily what that would look like or what marketing, to Jess's point, like what marketing jobs existed. So I love what we've been able to create.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, where you eventually got the idea for the brand or where the two of you met. So whatever came first, I don't know the story and I'm eager to find out. Whoever wants to jump in to start that one.
Yeah. So Bryn and I met at the Ivy Business School. So that's sort of adjacent to Western. And the first year is like technically your third year of university and you're put into a section. So there's eight sections with about 75 people in each of them. And we have similar last names. So we were sitting one person away from each other. So we met in our third year of school and we quickly became really close friends. And we were both interested in entrepreneurship. We had gone on like a women in business kind of school trip together and became really close. And then the concept of Double first emerged in our last year of university, which was actually a course where you had to either do a consulting project or bring a business to life kind of from A to Z. So we chose that one and we were really interested in industries that hadn't had a lot of disruption. And we were a group of women in a male dominant business school. So we felt really passionately about evolving women's products and bringing some innovation into that sphere.
Love that. Bryn, do you want to add color to that story?
No, just nailed it.
She summed it well. And tell me a little bit. So Jess, your passion was, you know, on the fashion side, and you kind of had been sewing and designing. Did the two of you have role models? And you just talked about how, you know, business school was kind of male dominated. So I'm guessing the product ideas, the brand ideas were kind of different from what you were dreaming about. Were there women entrepreneurs or women designers or, you know, women at the helm of brands that you looked up to that were a source of inspiration for you before you started or when you started?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question. I think both of my parents are like small business entrepreneurs. So my mom is a counselor and my dad is a carpenter. So they both work for themselves and they're both extremely passionate about what they do. So I think from a young age, I had this like need to find what that item was for me and what I felt passionately about. And then as I got older, I always loved Coco Chanel. Like, she was an inspiration from a young age. And then as I got older, I loved like Emily Weiss's story, and mm-hmm. we love Sarah Blakely, for example. Like, there's so many women that we look up to in this space. And even my sewing teacher, honestly, I think was a really huge inspiration to me and was a large reason as to why I pursued fashion.
Love that. Anybody else for you, Bryn?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at entrepreneurs, you see like all of the big names. So Sarah Blakely, definitely, you know, she's a woman who was in the intimate apparel space, who bootstrapped at the beginning, mm-hmm. such a great story, and really, you know, grew her business in a way that was authentic to her. But then I think the other interesting thing once you go into entrepreneurship is you meet so many business owners and founders. And so like the number of mentors I have now, whether they're at the same business I am or a couple of steps forward or a couple of steps behind, it's just really amazing. I think the entrepreneurship community, especially the female entrepreneurship community, and how many people are building such amazing things.
You set out to, you know, build not only fashion, but to build a brand in a very specific niche category. And it's a category where I think we're seeing a little bit more innovation and, you know, some younger brands kind of take over an important share of the market. But it used to be kind of the same large corporations, big players, you know, really owning that category. Were there challenges around the fact that it's kind of a category that is very niche with big players that kind of own much of the market share? I'm also curious to know what kind of feedback you were getting when you were, you know, kind of knocking on doors and starting to talk about what you were building, if anyone was trying to kind of discourage you from going in that direction. Because again, it's such a specific category with a specific set of needs.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest piece of advice we've gotten in this journey is to fall in love with the problem and not the solution. And that to me is kind of the best entrepreneurship advice, because your solution will change a million times over. But if you fall in love with the problem and it's a real problem that people experience, then, you know, as long as you stick with it, you can build something of value. So for us, the problem that we're solving is that 77% of women don't fit into standard sizes, and the standard sizing system doesn't support women's bodies. So when you grade patterns from like a small to a medium to a large, it gets graded in all directions, but women's bodies don't proportionally grow in all directions, right? We're all different shapes and sizes. So that's the problem that we're solving. We're solving it first with bras, because that's the biggest pain point given the diversity of shapes and sizes and the importance of precision fit, you know, and body closeness of that garment. But our vision really is to go into all women's wear, really specializing in women's bodies. And who knows, that might change, you know, 1,000 times in the next few years. So we'll see where we end up, but that's really the vision right now. In terms of challenges, like, I don't know if you have 10 hours, so I could go through all of them, but yeah, I'll hand it over to Jess to speak to some of the challenges that we've had along the way.
Yeah, I feel like when we started, we didn't really realize what we were getting ourselves into, mm-hmm. which I feel like is maybe a blessing, because it's like ignorance is bliss. So I feel like when we first started, we were just dabbling and we quite literally Googled like, how do you make a bra? And like, we weren't.
Good place to start. Fair enough.
Right. Yeah. And you realize how kind of pigeonholed you get in your corporate careers, because we were like, okay, Bryn has a background in marketing. I have a background in fashion. Like, we've got it all. And it's like, quite quickly you realize like, you know, one specific vertical of that industry and not the whole, you know, supply chain. So yeah, I feel like the initial challenges were around like all of our blind spots. Like, we aren't pattern makers. We don't have any experience sourcing materials. Like, we're not a factory. So it was like finding the additional team members that we needed or third party players. And since we have such a challenging business, really, like, there's a lot of different pieces that are coming together. So it took a while to find the right partners, I would say, to really bring the vision to life. And the technology is always evolving. Mm-hmm. So making sure that our thumb is really on the pulse on that area. And then later challenges start to become cash flow and what is the direction that you're wanting to take the business. Like, people start asking, you know, harder questions. So yeah, it's ever evolving. I would say you're never not going to have challenges. They're just presented in new ways as you grow. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. And something that's pretty unique about your brand is the use of 3D measurement technology, which allows women to measure, you know, their bodies accurately, and then you're able to build custom fitting bras from there. How did you bring in the tech piece, and was that something that was challenging too? Was it hard finding the right partner or building the tech if you built it yourselves?
Yeah, we took very much a like, the other thing that we looked at was like buy, build, and partner. Those are kind of the three avenues you can take. And so we were looking at, you know, okay, to get from point A to point B, what do we need in that, you know, supply chain? And this, the capturing of measurements, that lots of companies are doing that. So that was really more of like buy that solution.
Okay.
The manufacturing of garments, again, lots of companies manufacture bras around the world, so we can partner with those. What there wasn't that existed was taking those measurements and turning it into a manufacturable pattern. And so that's where we came into play. But Jess and I aren't tech people, so we took a different approach than most companies do. Instead of building the technology first and then seeing, you know, does it work? Do people like it? We figured out how to build a manual solution. The first version of it was an algorithm we made ourselves using circumference, you know, and pi and diameter. And then we, you know, from there built our own grading rule set and our own proprietary library database of, you know, standard patterns that we can then tweak. And that whole manual process we went to market with. So we lose money on every bra that we sell because the pattern making process is so in depth. But what that allows us to do is build the data sets that we need to then train an AI model and know that what we're building is something that people want, you know, and making sure that we have a pattern that women love before we then build a solution to create it. So we took a bit of a different approach, I think, than some technology companies do. But we're happy we took that approach because it allowed us to get, you know, that early traction, know we were going in the right direction, pivot a bit when we heard feedback, so that we're now building something that we know there's a market need for.
But Jessica, you made reference to the financing model, and Bryn just talked about, you know, building that each bra you're building, you're basically losing money on. So what was the financing strategy? Was it bootstrapping? Was it, you know, finding some angel investors or doing a crowdfunding? How did you get the operations going?
Yes. So we're completely bootstrapped to date, but we've leveraged almost every single one of the funding opportunities that you just mentioned. So we've done like a bit of debt financing. We've used our own savings. We've done a lot of non-dilutive funding through grants, pitch competitions, things like that. Like, we're very dialed into the resources that the government provides, resources that accelerator programs provide, provincial. So that's been a really, really helpful resource for us. We've done a small friends and family round that was debt structured. We have done crowdfunding. We launched on Kickstarter. So that was a great, great way to get early traction. And we are now raising our first pre-seed round.
Ooh,
so
exciting.
We're really excited about that. And we feel really confident that, like, it took us a long time to get to market because this process was very heavy in the research and development area, but it allowed us to maintain complete control of our vision and pivot quickly and strategize. And I think also we're very, like, scrappy, like, we utilize our dollars really well. So I think that's been a really great, yeah, just like a great learning for us. So now is the time that we're looking kind of to scale the business through automation. And that's why we're going to be raising for the first
time. Jess and I also were working more or less full-time jobs the last 5 years of building Double, so that we could put all of our, you know, extra money from paychecks into the business. So we only both went full-time on the business in February, which is only months ago. So it was a lot of that, like, side hustle bootstrapping for many years as we worked to build the feedback loop and really understand what we were building.
Have you started identifying who you'll be pitching for your pre-seed round? And are you looking to Canada, to the US? Are you looking to funds that support women or women-led brands more specifically?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above. We are looking both at angel investors and institutional funds who invest in early stage. For angel investors, we're looking, you know, at people who have alignment with our portfolio, whether they work or with our business, whether they have portfolio companies that are similar, or they talk about, you know, issues that we tackle as being something they're interested in. And then same with the institutional funds, like, we're looking for venture capital companies that speak to AI or building, you know, something big for the next, like, whatever the next consumer, you know, trend or, you know, new consumer adoption pattern will look like, or building, you know, the next big thing. So we are looking at kind of both of those, and we're, you know, agnostic to location, but we are a Canadian company. We're headquartered and incorporated in Canada, and we'll stay that way.
Do you think, and I mean, you've looked at financing and different options for it, and it sounds like you've done, you know, the pitches and probably some grants as well. Do you find that there is enough support in Canada for women entrepreneurs? And, you know, what's been your experience kind of tapping into it?
Yeah, I can start. So I think we became entrepreneurs at an interesting time where I do feel like women supporting women became really prominent. And we have an incredible network of female founders, mentors, advisors, professionals. Like, we've had a lot of positive support. And there's a lot of accelerators that are mainly focused towards women. But with that said, we all still know that women get, I think it's 2.7 to 2.9% of all VC funding. And while all of, you know, the grants that are coming out and the accelerators that are there do provide a lot of support, sometimes it's a little bit overkill on the mentorship side and a little bit underfunded from, like, a dollar perspective. So I would say that's our experience. Definitely lots of improvement, and we hope to continue seeing it go that way.
And how do you think consumers should be supporting women-led companies and women entrepreneurs in 2025? And, you know, I think there's, in certain categories, in certain industries, there's campaigns, you know, that call out, you know, women-owned companies, for example. So it helps consumers make more informed choices. But How would you approach that, and how are you seeing your audience approach that?
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about how it's voting with your wallet. So if there's something that you care about that's aligned to your values, you kind of need to put your money where your mouth is. We don't want to be the only precision fit option for women. Like, we hope that all the big companies follow suit so that nobody has to have that painful experience of trying to find your right size, feeling, you know, judged by the sizing system, or feeling uncomfortable in clothing that simply doesn't fit. So we hope that the industry can move in that way, but it will only move in that way if consumers start to adopt the new, you know, this new way of shopping. And I think it's interesting because in this particular industry, because we, you know, many people used to get clothing custom made, and then the Industrial Revolution, it was cheaper to make clothing that, you know, was standard sized. And I think people just started buying the cheapest option without really thinking about, you know, what quality was anymore. And I think as a society, mm-hmm. we moved a lot more into quantity over quality. So I think it's, I think it'll be interesting to see if people, as they become maybe more conscious of where their clothing comes from, you know, and how their clothing should serve them, how that might change. But it's definitely going to require a bit of a mindset shift, I think, around what clothing should cost, you know, and what those costs are.
Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.
Are you finding that you're also benefiting? I think there's been such a, you know, more awareness around the circularity of the clothing that we purchase, and, you know, so much of fast fashion, and again, things that are mass manufactured and not necessarily done with the best quality, or you know, using the best quality fabrics and or the best fit, and these are things that we end up wearing once and probably throwing out, and then obviously there's a huge environmental negative environmental impact as a result. Are you kind of seeing that trend too, that women are choosing to buy something that's going to last a lot longer and be built a lot better?
That's the number one question that we get is longevity of our products, because people, I think, do want to invest in clothing, but they also don't want to spend money on something that isn't going to serve them in the long term, right? Like, we know there's lots of consumers that are, including Jess and I, that are feeling cash strapped right now in this economy. So people are being very choiceful with their dollars, and we're very grateful when people elect to spend their dollars with us, because you know, there is lots of tension around where to spend your money, mm-hmm. and those choices are very personal. So I think it's been helpful for people to be thinking about that more. I think it's something that people are getting more interested in. We've seen that shift a lot with the secondhand and resale market, mm-hmm. but that doesn't really work for bras and underwear. Right. So yeah. Like, we would love if people, you know, got, you know, some of their closet new and made just for them, so they have perfect fitting basics, but then filled, you know, the fun part of their closet and their own personal style through thrifted items. That to me is the kind of ideal future.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's something to be said too. I recently listened to a podcast episode with the founder of Unspun, who is a founder that we look up to. And he made a really interesting point in saying, like, yes, consumer behavior is changing, but at the same time, in order for you to be the company or the product that's selected every single time, you need to be both sustainable and better and, like, the most affordable. Not necessarily the cheapest, but, like, you need to be affordable. Yeah. And I think that has resonated with us, because pricing's been a bit of a challenge since we have so many resources that go into the process of creating our bra, and it's a very unique manufacturing process. Mm-hmm. So we initially had it priced at more of a luxury price point, but then that's not accessible to everyone. And we really do see the future of this, you know, supply chain, this manufacturing process to be accessible to everyone. So we recently did lower our price, so it's quite comparable to other bras on the market. And we really feel like, you know, when you put apples to apples now, like, there's no reason why you wouldn't select the item that's going to fit you perfectly and that's going to last long and make you feel great. So that's, I think, another piece to be said, that sustainability alone, I don't think we'll ever necessarily win 100%.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. And given the current economy and its direction, I think it's a good step that you're taking, basically. Was there ever a point where it felt like, you know, there was a huge obstacle in your way, a big challenge, something that made you question, you know, your choice of becoming an entrepreneur, building this specific brand? And how did you deal with that obstacle in your way?
Yeah, I think we've had many moments like that. Brynn and I just have a pack that only one of us can be having a mental breakdown at one time.
This is why I need a partner. I need a co-founder for this reason.
Yeah. So I think having a co-founder is so helpful for that reason. We're in awe of solo founders. I think it is really challenging because you're going to have bad days, and it's really helpful to have somebody who's having a good day and they can kind of pull you back up and, you know, reinvigorate you. Mm-hmm. Just this past week, we had a bad week. We had a lot of no's back to back, and it was just, yeah, it was disappointing, and some money that we thought was coming in the door that didn't. And then we took all of the feedback from the week and we really revamped our messaging and our investor deck, and we ended up coming out of the week feeling more energized than ever and like really excited.
That's good.
So yeah, like I think each like low can have an opportunity for you to learn and take feedback and pivot. And I think that's something we've done really well as founders and learned over the past almost 5 years, is how to pivot and do it quickly and not to have too much, like take your moment to, you know, feel sad, but don't linger. Mm.
Anything to add, Bryn?
And just, you know, again, having a co-founder is helpful because the antidote to feeling down is laughing. So Jess and I, you know, we don't live in the same city. So we work together often over calls, and the nice thing about that is you can't get on each other's nerves as much, you know, given that you're together all the time. But the downside of that is you don't have those spontaneous moments. So because we spent most of the weekend working on the deck, we kind of had a call up almost the whole time. And then that made for just a lot more, you know, because we were friends first, like more organic conversation and lots of laughter. And just, I think, reconnecting with our purpose and our why and each other was a good antidote.
I love that. Would you say you are individuals, and it's interesting because there's two of you, so maybe there's a balance, or it's a split response, but do you make decisions based on intuition or data first?
So we split the business front end and back end. Back in the day, we did everything together. Like we wrote emails together. We were like one mind. And now as the business has grown, Brand handles the front end, so anything like marketing related, website related, investor relations related is her domain. And then anything back end, so supply chain, technology, product is in my domain. So we'll still have conversations and discuss everything together. And if we don't align on something, the person whose wheelhouse the decision is in gets like veto power.
Yeah.
Okay. And good system.
Yeah. And I think Jess and I both, in both of our different wheelhouses, just try to collect as much data as possible. So we've always taken a very iterative approach with what we're building. So like you go off, you know, you get something out there based on your intuition, collect data from people, and then refine it based on the data. So I think that's been our approach kind of in both domains. But as a marketer, if anybody listening can relate, it's been a lot harder to do data-driven decisions as we move to a cookie-less world, because you don't get as much data from the people visiting your site. So that to me has been a challenge. If anybody has any tips, I'm all ears. But sometimes you do feel like you're, you know, making decisions blind. And it's really problematic, I think, as a marketer, when you think of yourself as your target market, because first of all, for us, we're not our own target market, but also good marketers take themselves out of the equation, right, and have a lot of empathy. Same with like a good actor is somebody who acts lots of different parts, right? It's not kind of a one track. So that's been a challenge we've been facing ongoing from a data perspective.
That's a good one. So how do you kind of ensure you're getting feedback from your target audience? Are you kind of leveraging social media more or customer service more? How do you make sure you're getting that kind of that valid data in other ways?
Yeah, the best thing we've been doing is after delivering a bra, we call every single one of our customers.
Oh, wow.
which has been really fun, actually. So we get feedback on the design, on the fit, on the comfort level, on the packaging, just because we're still iterating on all of those things. Mm-hmm. So it's just so valuable to really hear from the source firsthand. So we've been doing that. Yeah, for every single customer. And that also helps us kind of close our feedback loop from an automation perspective, because it allows us to ensure that we're achieving perfect fit. And if not, that we're able to remake those bras until we do achieve perfect fit. So that's been great. We've also done focus groups. We've been trying to be where our customer is. So last year, Bryn and her mom went to the National Menopause Show. We're going again this year. We've done lots of events. And those are also the ways we found out who our target market was in the first place. So yeah, we try to be where she is as much as possible.
I love that. And that white glove kind of VIP service makes sense too, because what you're building is 100% custom at this point.
Yeah, it's very personal and intimate. And I would say those conversations always leave us feeling more energized. Like, there's nothing we love more than connecting with customers. And so, yes, it's collecting data, but it's also building community. And it's also, validating that problem that we're solving is a real problem. So it's always nerve-wracking when you're calling somebody and the phone's ringing and you don't know if they'll answer, what they'll be like, right? Cold calling. But we always...
Also, we're not used to getting that many calls anymore. So it must be a surprise in some cases. Like, what do you mean you made my brother calling me?
We get lots of screening and then we leave voicemails. And then people do tend to call back, which is great. But
that's great.
So we do love doing them.
And it also allows you to see consistent feedback, which I think is super valuable. Mm-hmm. So like out of, the last 100 people we called, these were the two things that we heard from like 70% of them, right? So that really allows us to inform like the version 2 of the bra, or like what our next product will be, or like, through the last calls that we've done, like we've changed our packaging. So just things like that, that are just so easy to tweak after just like spending a few hours on the phone.
You've made reference to the fact that, you had a full-time job up until a few months ago. And it sounds like you're now all invested, and I know what it is when you're just building something from the ground up, and those first few years are so important. How do you find, and this is all the $1 million question, but what kind of keeps you sane? And I hate talking about work-life balance, because I don't think we can have balance in all areas all the time. As women, we've kind of been sold that myth, unfortunately. But what are practices or things that helps you keep grounded and stay sane when it all gets too much?
Yeah, it's a great question. We agree with you. We don't like using the word balance. We use seasons.
Oh, yeah. So that makes sense. That's good. That's a good one.
Yeah. I don't think I've been sane for the last year and a half, to be really honest. However, that is something that we are working on and wanting to be. So something that Brynn and I both do is we're like calendar obsessed. So we share our Google calendars and we schedule everything. So we schedule sleep, we schedule getting ready, we schedule personal time, we schedule obviously everything we're doing for work. And we found that to be helpful because A, it gives us visibility on each other's calendars so we can give each other time, and especially being into different time zones. And then also to make yourself have those breaks. Mm. So if you put in a block to meditate, or you put in a block to make a nice dinner, like you actually have scheduled time for it, so it doesn't just get forgotten. So that's been helpful. I personally have started doing just like a little gratitude journal in the morning, and I feel like that's really helpful. Getting 8 hours of sleep, if possible, is a big one. Trying to stay active. I find that one a bit hard to be consistent. Spending time with friends. We definitely have strived not to be those founders. Like, you hear so many stories of people saying, like, 5-10 years later, once they're successful, they're like, I woke up one day and realized I don't have any friends anymore because I wasn't there for like any big events and I was always busy. So I think we both value our relationships greatly. So making sure that we do prioritize time for the people who are important in our lives.
Yeah, just touched on a lot of the big ones. I think routine really helps. Having a strong routine. The other thing I've been thinking about a lot in terms of work-life balance, right, and other people say work-life integration, is you have things in your life, whether professionally or personally, that fill your cup. And then you have other things professionally or personally that drain your cup. And so I think really it's about finding a balance between cup filling activities and cup draining activities. Because there are times where I'm at work and I don't feel like I'm working, right? My cup's being filled and having a conversation with somebody, or, I'm doing something that really excites me. And then there's other parts of my job that I don't leave feeling very energized after. And so I think that's what I've been trying to do, is really balance my energy levels. And that might mean, one week I'm working a lot, but it's fine because I'm doing work that fills my cup.
That's a great way of looking at it. And I think often we make that mistake, especially as entrepreneurs, of forgetting that there are things part of work. We chose to do this because we're passionate about what we do. And there are aspects of our work that fill our cup, as you were saying, that give us energy.
Yeah, there's also some parts of
like depleting it.
Yeah, there's some parts of your personal life that also drain your energy, right? So
yeah.
So sometimes like it's really about balancing, I think, like, yeah, if you think about draining versus like nourishing or filling versus work versus life.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Kind of going back to your vision for the brand and you're building for or you're starting to fundraise for the pre-seed round, and that's going to take you to next step. So what's the next big milestone? What are the things you're looking to accomplish over the next few months?
Yeah, the biggest milestone that we have is bringing on a senior machine learning engineer and automating our current manual process. So that will bring us to profitability and also allow us to expand into other styles quickly. So that's a huge milestone. And then really focusing in on marketing and sales, I think.
Yeah, we have a really strong repeat rate. So, I mean, we've only been shipping bras for the last 12 weeks. And 35% of customers have already repurchased. And one third of those customers purchased more than one bras from the get-go. So we know that when women like try the bra, they love it. They're replacing all their bras with double bras. And so now it's just how do you get more women to know about the bra? And that's the challenge with a direct-to-consumer business, right? Is you don't have foot traffic necessarily to be driving sales, and you have to convince each person to buy your product. So we've been thinking up ways, you know, to reach more people at scale, but also, you know, different marketing tactics, like focusing just on a small geographic area and saturating that before moving on. So we're just testing a couple of different things from a marketing perspective.
Okay, exciting. And in closing, if you had to pick, and you know, there's two of you, so maybe two pieces of advice each, things that you wish you knew earlier before starting this journey, things you learned along the way, if you had to share tips and advice with other women in business, what would those be? Whoever's ready to go first.
We used to, when we would get this question and we were in the like first few years, we used to say like, find what you're passionate about because passion wins at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And we've changed that a bit. And our new favorite P word is patience, that, you know, you won't always see the results right away. It's kind of like working out, right? Like you go to the gym once and you're not going to see those results immediately. But if you go consistently over a long period of time, so one of my favorite quotes is, you overestimate how much you'll accomplish in a year and you underestimate how much you'll accomplish in 10. And so that's always a good reminder to just like keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep going. And even if it feels like it's not resonating, you know, the seeds are being planted, there's stuff happening underneath the soil, and eventually they'll bloom.
I think the only thing I would add to that is surround yourself with a strong network, like especially as a solo founder, if you can get involved in a female, like if you're a woman, get involved into like a female founder network and have that person that you can go to on those days that you're feeling low, like maybe it's a family member or a friend. But I think there's something to be said about having somebody in the space, because I think being an entrepreneur is a really unique endeavor and not everyone understands it if they're not in that world. So I think if you can have somebody, like if it's just another founder or if it's a mentor or somebody that you can call on those days and kind of share tidbits, and maybe that person's a little bit ahead of you and they can tell you what their pitfalls were so you can avoid them, that's invaluable.
Love that. And it sounds like you've built a great network of advisors and, you know, other founders who share their insights with you. Thank you so much. So we'll link all the ways that our listeners can find out more about the brand and order your products as well. Excited to see what you're building in the next phases of growth, and wishing you all the best for the pre-seed fundraising that you're doing, and excited to see, again, you know, to use your example, a year from now, how much you'll have accomplished. So thank you so much for sharing your journey with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ava. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Brand is Female podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of the Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.